Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay in the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show. I think we have a little background noise here. But it's a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. Tonight, I have a very special guest who we'll be talking to in a few minutes, and her name is Suzette Hinton. And if you'd like to call into our show, you can call in at 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that number again, 646-716-4893. And if you don't feel like calling in because you feel a little embarrassed, that's okay. Some people are radio shy. You can always write to me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E @aol.com. Before I introduce Suzette, I just want to make a few announcements. That, first of all, I'm starting to gather people together. We have a lot of people already signed up for our healing weekend in September, which will really be probably our largest healing weekend yet. I have some wonderful stuff going on that weekend, so if you're interested, please let me know. There will always be room for one more, and that one more hopefully will be you, because it's proven to us time and again that support is what helps women get through these issues. And, you know, you can't do it alone. The healing process really takes a lot of camaraderie and a lot of friendship and a lot of support, and that's why we have these healing weekends. So we'll be here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and we'll have women coming in from all over, even some from overseas, so I'm really excited about that. Also, I would like to remind people that we have our United Kingdom chat starting tomorrow. I'm really excited about that. This is going to be our first UK-Europe chat. And, of course, if you're here in the United States or in Canada and you would like to join in because the time fits better for you, it's in the afternoon, more than happy to have you. Just write me a note at bonkay@aol. So without any further ado, I'm going to introduce my very special guest and friend. I'm not sure if I should change that order around Suzette, friend and guest, Suzette Hinton. And welcome back to our show, Suzette.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's a pleasure to be here, an absolute pleasure.
Well, every time you're here, you truly inspire women. I always get such wonderful positive feedback. And, you know, your story is so compelling, whether you're a straight wife or just a woman who needs inspiration. And, of course, we met through, you know, our gay husband connection. And
right.
So many of our women say this to me, Suzette, so that's why I was hoping you could tell a little bit of your story. So many women, even tonight on the chat, we had a lot of women, and a new woman gets on and says, I feel like such an idiot, I feel so stupid. Mm-hmm. And, of course, everybody says, well, so did we. And I said, well, if you want to really listen to someone who really feels that way, listen to our show tonight, because I think Suzette can give you some insight on how you do feel like that, right?
Oh, my goodness, I sure can.
So maybe you can tell people a little bit about your story.
Well, I'll start out with the right from the end of it. Talk about feeling stupid. I married my husband twice.
Uh-huh.
And that, it made me feel like I had added insult to injury.
Uh-huh.
by doing so. Because the first time, I think the issue was, you know, when you don't have facts and you only have your gut and you've
uh-huh.
not been taught to regard it, then you can easily talk yourself out of it.
And
you
also,
know?
Let's tell people a little bit that you were brought up in a very strong church environment, right?
Yes, very, very strong. Even though I can credit it with teaching me a true reverence for God, on the downside, however, because of the very strict environment, there were so many things about life and about men and about the world outside of that protected church environment that I did not know. So when I got away from church and I started to deal with men, I really was not prepared. Uh-huh. I was not prepared for men, and I certainly wasn't prepared for a gay man. I didn't know how to disseminate it, because some people might say, well, some people might say they didn't know. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't say that. He told me that he had been in that life before. But he also told me that God had delivered him. And growing up in a Pentecostal holiness kind of background, the idea of God delivering was preached all the time. He was a deliverer. Mm-hmm. And I still believe that he is. It's just that I didn't understand orientation. I didn't understand that that sexual orientation also meant your emotions. Everything that I feel toward a man as a heterosexual woman is what he feels toward a man. So it wasn't
exactly
just sex.
But
and
the important
I did not
thing was that, right, and I think a lot of the importance that I like to explain to women, and you will confirm this, is that when you grow up in a Christian background where homosexuality is an abomination of everything you stand for, and people do believe in the church that if you pray, that can bring change. So mm-hmm. It wouldn't be that unusual that if somebody's telling you that they've been delivered, for you not to believe that, right?
Exactly. And I even though there were skeptics, it's almost like that kind of thing when your teenage daughter likes a guy and you're saying, oh, but I don't like him. It's
mm-hmm.
going to make her even more drawn to him.
Mm-hmm.
So even though I started dating him and there were some naysayers that said, well, you know, he used to be this way, or, well, you know, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. Don't you believe God is a deliverer? I believe he is. You know, so it made me even more drawn to him than repelled.
Well, I think another factor is this. And how old are you, Suzette?
Oh, I am now 53 years young.
Yes, you are. Your life has just re-begun again. But, you know,
yes.
Taking it in context a little bit, you know, also I'm a little bit older than you, like almost a decade older. And when I was growing up, you know, the train of thought was, well, in the 60s, everybody tried everything. So it wasn't mm-hmm. unusual for people to have all kinds of sexual experiences and orgies and drugs, and everything was tied in together. So if a guy came to you and said, yes, he had tried something, the train of thought was, okay, you tried it, you didn't like it, you're telling me you're straight. Everybody
yeah.
experimented, that big E word, experimented, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's just not who you are. And so even if I had known that, not growing up in a church and not having that kind of experience, I would still feel, well, it's okay. He tried it. He didn't like it. And that's why, you know, he's straight now. So I didn't
mm-hmm.
understand anything any better and not growing up in the church. So it's easy to see why this happens, right?
Yes, it is. Yes,
and especially we don't understand homosexuality because we're thinking, why would a gay man want to marry us? I mean, I would never even have crossed that in my mind.
And so it almost made me feel like I was special, that he had been in that life and then he meets me, falls in love with me and wants to marry me. Then I'm like, man, I got it going on.
Mm-hmm. And you did try in your marriage, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. And the first time around, I didn't catch him in anything. So even though my gut would say different things, when I would see a slight look in his eyes when a guy would pass by or he seemed overly friendly or overly interested, I would kind of, if he explained it away, especially using the biblical reference, then it would
uh-huh.
put me in a quandary, because if I'm a person of faith and I believe the Bible and you give me something biblical, then now I'm really having a rough time if I don't believe it.
So when did it come? When did you realize that it was the first time you were married?
When did I realize that something was off about him?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was when we were dating. I'll never forget. I had dropped by his apartment, and there was this very handsome guy that had kind of a French type sound to his voice, and he introduced him to me. And it wasn't so much the guy acted like anything was different. But I remember, here I am, the fiancé, and I'm sitting on the sofa, and the two of them go into another room because he said that he had some kind of joint pain, and the guy was going to apply some kind of alcohol or something to his back. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why do you have to go behind closed doors for him to do that, and I'm your fiancé? And then it even made it more uncomfortable because I was hearing laughing from behind that door.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this awful feeling. It was just like, ugh, this is kind of like, ugh. But because I couldn't see anything, and I wasn't a person that would venture to go knock on the door and say, look, let me in. Y'all are having too much fun without me. I wasn't that bold. So therefore, I kind of sat there and felt uncomfortable. It was the most awful feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in the absence of seeing anything, and he's like, well, Suzette, he's my best friend. I mean, are you that insecure? What did you think we were doing back there? He was just putting alcohol on me. I mean, my goodness. He had a way of turning it back on me and using my own insecurities or using what I knew about the Bible against me. I think I shared in one previous radio show, Bonnie, when I had broken up with him, I was going to break up with him because I felt like it was just really awkward that when I come to see him, that he seemed to be kind of cold when it came to affection.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to break up with him, and he said, oh, you're breaking up with him because I'm not pawing all over you like other men? I'm going to marry you. I have too much respect for you to treat you like you're just an object.
And it sounded good, right?
It sounded good, and it made me feel bad, and so what do I do? And he's talking about, you know, here I'm trying to honor you as a Christian man. I see you as a woman of value, of grace, and here you want to taint it by making it all about sex, making it all about me wanting to paw all over you, that kind of thing. And so then it makes me go back to the altar, and I'm crying and praying, Lord, please forgive me. Here you've sent me a great man who loves me for more than my body, and I don't know how to deal with it. Please help me, please help me, please help me. I didn't, and the funny thing about it is your intuition knows. It may not know exactly what's going on, but it knows something is off, and we're not taught to regard our intuition. In the absence of facts, many of us are not taught to regard our intuition.
And I think that's such a good point, where our intuition is telling us something, but because we don't have the facts, we just don't know.
Exactly. And I guess the thing about it is, I'm not saying just, you know, be trigger happy, but I am saying that if your intuition says something about this is weird, if that's legitimate enough for you to slow your roll and pump the brakes until you feel comfortable going forward. And many times we let guilt cause us to override it instead of allowing that intuition to cause us to say, uh-oh, wait a minute, I don't have all my facts yet, but something's wrong, so I'm going to pump my brakes. I'm going to slow my roll because something's wrong. And I trust my intuition enough to say, hey, I can hold off on this. I can back up.
So you ended the first time, right?
Yes, I did. Left the relationship,
mm-hmm.
divorced, and I remember I went through a bad situation with the church I was in at that time. And at about the very same time, my son started having some really, really difficult times. He was missing his dad. He was crying all the time. And so I called his father and said, listen, despite what's happened to break us up, your son really needs you. So he started coming back and spending time with our son. And, of course, in the beginning, I would almost, like, push my son out the door and close it real fast because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have anything to do with him. But then as time went on, you know, we'd have exchange words, you know, niceties, hi, how are you doing? And then after a while it became more conversation, and then he plugged into my pain. You know, I know what it's like for you to be at a church and for you not to be understood, you know. And so one thing led to another. And next thing I knew, he was back in my good graces. He told me that he had learned his lesson. Of course, I had never caught him in anything, so there was nothing for him to really apologize for.
Uh-huh.
Only thing he said is that he struggled with the emotional. He was struggling emotionally from time to time, but that
uh-huh.
he was never unfaithful to me. And of course, he's giving me this attention. He's listening. He's understanding my reasons for having difficulty at this church. There's nobody. I hadn't been dating anybody else. So one thing leads to another. Next thing I know, we're back into an intimate situation. And the difference this time, however, he didn't seem to be, he didn't seem to shy away from intimacy. He didn't
uh-huh.
seem to shy away from being sexual. Quite the contrary. It was like, man, he couldn't get enough of me.
Uh-huh.
And so I figured, okay, then whatever he was dealing with, he must have gotten that together. And he kept telling me, you know, I promised God that if he gave me another chance with you, that I would not blow it because you were the best thing that happened to me.
And it sounded very logical, right?
It sounded very logical. He was being good to our son. Our son was doing well. And he wanted to make it up to us. And I was like, you know, why not? Why not give him the opportunity? Why not put the family back together again? Why not?
And also, I think, you know, you were still very involved, you know, with your strong faith, right?
Yes.
And that God could, you know, maybe this time do the miracle.
Right. And then, of course, playing in my mind was, well, you know, you didn't actually catch him in anything.
Uh-huh.
So, again, it was that absence of fact that left room for me to, and then a little bit of guilt too, because the first time we were together, as a result of my sharing my story with our then leader, he ended up being disfellowshipped from the church.
Uh-huh.
And I felt guilty about the way that went down. So when you add all that together, it left me open.
And I think that's just because you're a good person, like most of our women are. And we're always hoping for the best in these men, because I think they know how to find us and how to seek us out, because we are a prototype of a certain woman they look for, someone who's caring, forgiving, nurturing, understanding, and naive in certain ways.
Yes.
And I think that we all have those elements.
Yes. Definitely.
So you went back again, and how long was it? Were you together the second time?
About the same duration as the first. I think the first time we broke up at about 4.5 years. The second time was about 5 years and a little bit more. 5 years and some change. So it was still around that kind of five-ish mark.
Uh-huh.
But this time it was a lot worse because my economy was tied into him this time. Whereas the first time it wasn't.
And so, I mean, what made you move away from him the second time?
The second time, it was a slow walk back to the same thing. I started having that same feeling of, you don't really want me to touch you. You're uncomfortable, not just with sex, but you're uncomfortable with any affection, and you rationalized it, you know, you kept me busy, you know. That's one thing with the second time around that was different from the first time around. He kept me busy all the time. There was always some fire to put out with the company that we had together. There was always something, whether it was the finances, issues with the company, with staff. He kept me busy and kept so many things going. There was always some kind of chaos going on, always something that needed my attention.
Uh-huh.
And between juggling the company we had together, running the household, his declining debilitation because I was kind of ushered into a caregiving role because he had some type of muscular degenerative disease. So there was always something going on. Our son was older. School, because of his declining mobility, they put more pressure on me. So I was constantly doing, and I would be. I think he was hoping I'd be too tired to want any kind of intimacy. But the thing about it was, it was beyond the bedroom. I could not just sit beside him and lay my head on his shoulder. I could not kiss him. I could not touch him unless it was like if it was in any kind of up close intimate look or touch. He would freeze, like it was so uncomfortable for him. And then the whole issue of the down low came out. With J.L. King's book, Living on the Down Low. And so then he started trying to tell me that it wasn't, the issue was not that he was gay. The issue was that he was down low. And that if I understood that, it would really help our marriage because I would understand that he really loved me and wanted to be married to me and wanted a life with me. It's just that his struggle, he had a struggle with wanting to have sex with men, though he never carried it out, but that was the struggle, but it did not make him gay. He was still 100% man, 100% dude, and that he's in love with me. So, again, he suggested and brought into the mix something I was completely ignorant about. Didn't understand it. So it was the same kind of issue, but this time I wasn't as gullible. This time I asked the hard questions. This time I debated. This time I colored outside the lines. I veered outside the closet.
And you trusted your intuition, right?
Yes, and I knew that. I remember praying and saying, okay, God, if what I'm sensing is correct, I'm going to need you to teach me everything. I want to know. I'm going to go there. I'm going to leave no stone unturned. I'm not going to let him guilt me into, how, you know, you're talking to other people about our marriage like I was being unfaithful to him because I was telling other people about our private situation. I did not allow myself to be imprisoned in that way anymore. And that's when I started asking questions. I started talking to other men who were gay. I started talking to straight men. I started talking to everybody. And I started telling them some things that were happening in the relationship. I started seeking a counselor. Uh-huh. I went online. I said, God, I want to know the truth. This time, when I leave, I don't want to ever come back again, and I don't want to ever be fooled again by another man who was gay or take it a step further, who was unavailable.
Right, because as I tell our women, if, you know, this time you're getting out of a marriage with a gay man, but there are a lot of men out there who are really predators, and they don't have to be gay. They're just very dysfunctional men who will never make good partners for you. And, in fact, you know, I really write about that in my book, Man Readers, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men. And there are so many dysfunctional men out there, and if you don't straighten your own life out, you're just going to find another predator. And that's what it comes down to. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree. I told somebody, I said, you know what? I realize I'm a magnet for unavailable men. Whether it's gay, straight, whatever, they are emotionally unavailable or in some way unavailable. And when I understood that I was a magnet for unavailable men, then I started putting myself in a position to deprogram. And I actually told myself when I started dating again, if you meet somebody and immediately you feel hot toward them, 9 times out of 10 they're unavailable, so keep it moving. And I had to start educating myself as to what, almost had to kind of change what was attractive to me, where I wasn't so drawn in by the externals, but I started focusing more on kindness. I started focusing more on a person who keeps their word. I started focusing more on character and other attributes. Because, you know, the older you get, a good man becomes sexier and sexier. And so I started recognizing what a good man is. Started finding that more and more desirable.
Well, that's something where you have to really retrain your instincts, right?
And you can. People say you can't help who you're attracted to. I beg to differ. I beg to differ. I think when you start really understanding beyond his biceps, beyond his chiseled features, beyond those other things that make us hot for somebody, when you say, okay, I acknowledge I like that, but if you're mean to the waitress, if you don't pay your child support, if you minimize how I feel, if you don't show up when you say you're going to, I don't care how cute you are. You start, you know, it starts going down. Your stock starts going down. So I started holding myself accountable to saying, okay, calm down, Susan. Let's wait to see what's behind the wrapper. Let's unwrap this cat. You know, let's unwrap this cat to see what's really there. And the more I started dating guys and holding myself accountable to that, the more I started being more attracted to men who did do what they said they were going to do. Men who did me feel like they were happy that I was dating them instead of I should just be okay because they're a man and they showed up.
Suzette, do you think some women set themselves up for failure?
Oh, yes, Bonnie. I do. And it's very sad because a lot of times we don't realize that there is a wound there that, yes, we have put on adult clothes, but that wounded little girl still very much there. And instead of pushing her to the corner and acting like she doesn't exist or thinking because you have an education or you have money, you're compensating for it. Instead of thinking that, you know, you're beyond her, you have to learn how to embrace her. You have to learn how to heal the wound so that you can see things more clearly. Because otherwise, if you don't, you stay stuck. He might look different, but it's the same thing.
That's what I tell women. You know, you can fix yourself up, you can become a whole new person physically, but if you don't change who you are mentally and emotionally, it doesn't matter what you look like. You're going to keep repeating those same mistakes. And there's no sense, you know, spending thousands of dollars to look different if inside you're the same. Is that right?
That's so true. Because I would say fascinated, but no. I think I should say I'm always surprised, astounded even, by the fact that after many, many multiple failed relationships, I meet women all the time who will spend hundreds of dollars in their lips, their hips, and their fingertips, but will not invest in healing the wound or learning who they are and learning who men are and how men think.
Then they're surprised when they go out and meet the same kind of man who does the same kind of thing to them, right?
Yes, and their hair is cuter, their nails are cuter, they've lost a few pounds, but it doesn't matter. All they have is more dysfunctional men looking at them than they were before. That's the only difference. You're still attracting the same dysfunction, just the quantity has gone up.
Now that is really funny. That's a really great way to look at it. But it's so true. I mean, you just attract more dysfunctional men.
That's true.
So there's so many different kinds out there. You know, it's just not gay. Because, you know, I've been married to men who had mental illnesses, severe depression, OCD, you know, you name it. You know, I've made a number of mistakes in my own life because of my own insecurities and feeling that, you know, I just wanted to be loved and wanted to be wanted. It didn't matter who was doing it. And, you know, I think there comes a time in your life where you have to love yourself enough to say, I'm not going to settle anymore.
And to teach yourself what that is.
Mm-hmm.
To teach yourself when you are settling. Because there's a difference. I often hear women rationalize a man's behavior. I remember talking to a friend who had met this man, and while they were talking, this person was doing something. They were talking via online, and he was doing something in the background that when she told me about it, I thought to myself, that was rude. But she thought, you know, he's so down to earth. You know, he is so genuine, authentic. He's not even trying to fake it. He's not trying to act like he's anything but who he is. And I'm thinking to myself, baby doll, you need to read some books. That was rude.
And so we rationalized. Talking about books, Suzette, let's talk about your new book.
Oh, yeah, my new book. I call it my new book baby. It's my new book baby.
And it's so beautiful, The Sound of My Life.
Yes, The Sound of My Life.
So talk
every
a little bit
life about, has but, a sound, yes.
So tell our listeners what it's about.
It's a book about my journey from losing the sound of my own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of losing the sound of my voice, I lost a sense of who I was. I lost a sense of my own self-value. And so it's my journey from going to that soundless place to beginning to hear my own voice amidst all the other voices and beginning to tune into my own voice and what resonated with me and what fit me and honoring that and allowing that to slow walk me into a fulfilling life and into what I call the sound of my life. I went from the sound of my voice to the sound of my life. And that sound is purposeful living, the sound of my purpose.
Can I talk about a couple things or ask you about a couple things you have on your website, which I sent out to people at SuzetteHinton.com, where you talk about Live Your Dreams Boot Camp, where
yes.
you say you will take your ego out of your vision and rewrite it from an authentic place. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I can. I think a lot of times we read books, especially purposeful books or books that are about dreaming and fulfilling your dreams. A lot of them tell us to write a vision statement. But I think a lot of times if we're still operating in an egoic sense of not knowing who we are or not knowing that we're enough or that we're envious of, quote-unquote, the American dream, we'll write a vision statement that's mired in that instead of really allowing ourselves to get to know who we really are.
Uh-huh.
We might use it for an example. Somebody's vision statement might be something as simple as, I want to be wealthy. I want to be a millionaire. That might be their vision statement. But they might be basing that vision statement on Donald Trump or
uh-huh.
on Bill Gates kind of wealth, and they might not even know how to use a computer, you know. Or you're looking at it from an ego standpoint instead of saying, you know, what they represent to me is freedom.
Uh-huh.
And so my vision statement is I want to be free. And then you allow the sound of your voice to amplify what that means to you
uh-huh.
and use your skills and your talents and your giftedness to help bring you into it. So you're going from an ego-driven place of envying someone else what they have to looking at what you have and letting that lead you to an authentic expression
uh-huh.
of the freedom that the other people represent
and
or the validation that the other people represent.
And you talk about ignoring, you will stop ignoring or avoiding your insecurities, but will invite them to guide you in securing or securing the person within. And I think that's a really important factor there, because we all have insecurities.
Yes.
And we all turn away from, you know, we just walk away or quietly pass away from anything that's going to make us a little nervous, right?
Indeed. And I think, like using the example I used earlier, we think that insecurity is a bad thing. So instead of us allow that feeling to lead us into a deeper understanding of what's behind it, we dismiss and abandon that part of ourselves and try to compensate for it in some way. We'll try to compensate for it by getting a man, compensate for it by getting our PhD. And all those things are wonderful if they come from a place of wholeness and a place of understanding your own self-value. But when you're running away from an insecurity and think that that's going to be the cure for it, you set yourself up for getting hurt, for getting to the top of the hill and then saying, now what? There's nothing up here.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I think that's such a good point.
Yes,
and what about,
so
what is,
I have a
what
chapter,
is,
yes.
What is
I'm
this
sorry,
one?
I have
you
a chapter. Oh.
Go right ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. And so I have a chapter that's called In-Secure, where instead of running away from our insecurities, we're learning to secure the person within by facing them.
And that insecurity could cause you to make bad decisions in relationships on a personal level, in jobs or employment, right?
Yes, indeed.
I mean, look
yes,
how many
indeed.
People not only stay, for instance, you know, we always talk about women who stay and linger in bad relationships and waste years of their lives being somewhere where they shouldn't be. But that also so many times happens with women in employment. You know, there are jobs that they hate, but because they don't have, the, you know, they're feeling insecure, you know, they don't feel that they can do any better. So they just stick and stay.
That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I did. And when my cousin, who is very, very close to me and the same age, he died unexpectedly. And it really shook me. And at that moment, I asked myself that if I died, if I drop dead right now, would I feel like, would I have any regrets? And my answer was yes. And it was because I felt like, despite all the strides that I had made in my life, I still wasn't living my life completely on my terms.
Mm-hmm.
I still was not living a fulfilling life. And I sat up and I said, you know what, I hate my job. I hate it. And the reasons that I decided to take it in the first place are no longer relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So why am I still there? Well, I have a mortgage and I have bills. But that was not enough anymore of a reason to stay. It wasn't good enough anymore. And so it put me on a journey to look for fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, I am now 100% working for myself. I am now doing it. And I launched three businesses that were where I had subcontracted in between, quote, unquote, real jobs.
Uh-huh.
And I decided, you know what? The happiest I was when I was doing my own thing, working for myself. And in that moment, I realized that the reason I was feeling unfulfilled was because I was playing small. I wasn't truly allowing my gifts and my talents and my skills to really be actualized the way that they were intended to be. And when I decided to leave my job and go on this quest for fulfillment, I found it by doing what I was gifted and talented and doing what brought me joy. And I employed the services of a business strategist who helped me to package it in such a way that now I'm making enough income, which is more than what I was making before. So,
but that takes courage. And, you know, I understand that. A lot of women feel really stuck. But without having a goal and a dream, you'll be stuck forever. And if you give up hope and you just accept it, because I know that I worked at a place for 23 years, and to be honest with you, I was making really great money, but I wasn't feeling good about myself anymore because my job scope had changed, my bosses had changed, and the fulfillment that I once had from that job was no longer there. And 23 years is easy to become stuck somewhere, and so I had to make that big jump, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, because I knew that mentally, you know, financially I was doing good, but mentally I was doing bad. So I took that risk also and, you know, started my own business and opened up a little school for, you know, high school dropouts. And, yes, I am working just as hard as ever, but at least I'm working for myself. And I'm doing it my way, right? I'm doing it what I want to do. I developed it my own way. And so I feel that sense that, you know, something is fulfilling, and money can't buy everything. I know you need it to survive, but if you're miserable where you are, what's the point?
Exactly. And now, oh, my joy is rising. I'm becoming more and more fulfilled. I love what I'm doing. I love coaching. I love writing. I love what I'm doing with my music. I love what I'm doing with my administrative services. I love the possibilities. And now I'm able to believe in them. I'm beginning to see myself as capable.
But you have to take that step.
And it opens more and more doors. Exactly. Exactly.
Let me ask you this, Suzette. On your list for your boot camp, what does this mean you will prepare for ants at the picnic?
Ah, the beloved ants. Whenever you come to a point in your life where you're starting to honor the sound of your life and you're starting to make decisions about how you're going to use your life, the people you're going to hang around, all those different things, your life goes through a transition. Your environment changes. And one day you wake up and realize that there's nothing familiar anymore, and all the joy that you had, oh, I'm hearing the sound of my voice. Oh, I'm plugging into my authentic self. All that joy of finally giving yourself permission to do it, you look around, it's like crickets and ants of doubt. Ants of, oh, they don't call me anymore to invite me to go to anywhere anymore. My phone isn't ringing anymore. Ants of, I'm all alone. All those different insecurities. And you start questioning, was it worth it? Can I do this? You know, and you start feeling, even though you are great, it's great, you're in your own skin, you're feeling good, but you kind of miss the family members inviting you to come to certain things. You miss your girlfriends. They all went and hung out together and you weren't invited, but you heard about what a great time they had. You start realizing that your world has changed. Because you honored who you were. And there's that in-between place where you spread out your picnic, you know, you got your picnic basket full of all those delicacies called you, and you got your blanket spread out, and you're feeling good, and all of a sudden you realize you're alone.
And it's not always a good place to feel, right? Because when you're first feeling that, then you start questioning yourself and doubting yourself again. Did I make the right choice? You know, why are people perceiving me this way? Before they were so happy to be with me. Now they're shunning me. And then you second guess yourself because you weren't that secure to start with.
And I think
when you're not feeling secure as a person, as almost all of us aren't, you know, women in general, but especially women who have been through adversity as we have, that it doesn't take much to build up some security and then have it knocked down pretty quickly again because we don't have a track record of it, right?
True, and one of the things that I say in my book is I wish during that time in my life I had had a coach. I had had a life coach because I didn't understand how to navigate it. I didn't understand that was part of the journey. And so as a result, it makes you feel vulnerable. And when you feel vulnerable, some of the old things that you walked away from start trying to come back. And in my case, it was my ex-husband. And as a result of a lot of that, I opened the door back up and married him again.
And it's easy to make a second mistake or a third or
a
fourth.
That's a mistake. And if I had had someone in my life, a mentor, somebody that I had been talking to, a relationship coach, someone that could see, they could have said, Suzette, don't panic. You're just in transition. This is to be expected. But you know what? If you stay committed, you'll make new friends. And they might would even encourage me to take some risks. Why don't you join meetup.com and start going to some venues that are of interest to this new you? You know, you got your new clothes on, your new attitude. You know, you're beginning to listen to the sound of your voice. You're beginning to honor your authentic self. Go to places where other people are doing the same thing. You know, but I didn't have that. I didn't even think of that. It didn't even enter my mind, my thoughts.
I think it's kind of similar. I think it's kind of similar. You know, I tell my students who I teach, you know, who dropped out of high school, and they didn't have parents who finished high school either. And it's hard to get support or help from people as far as making your next step when they've never made it. And I think
exactly.
that a lot of our women come from families where there was dysfunction in the family. Not everybody grew up in a happily ever after kind of environment. And if you haven't had success, you know, growing up in your own family, and then you walk into a bad situation in your relationship, which often does happen, because it's always looking better than what you grew up in, and then you find that's a disaster, then you really don't have a track record of success, of emotional success.
Yes.
And that's where
true.
I think a coach is so important, where you could have your own personal cheering team. And I do want to say this because, you know, I just had this conversation with one of my best friends. People, as you mentioned earlier, they'll invest in all kinds of superficial, artificial things to make them feel better, whether it's, you know, getting surgery or, you know, facial surgery or breast implants or whatever the case is. And yet if they haven't, you know, if they don't have the support to change within, they're not investing in themselves for real. And that's why I think that you as a coach, you know, it's so important that, you know, you have the services, this is your business, to be a coach for people to see that they're able to make these positive changes and for you to cheer them on while they're doing it so that they go and, you know, they don't fall back into the same patterns. Is that what you would say
Indeed.
Your coaching is about?
Yes, and accountability and support, you know, I think are the two greatest things, especially when you have a dream or you're coming out of something on your way to something else. You need support and you need accountability because life is going to happen and people are going to happen. And at first you're kind of relieved that you're finally out of all that chaos, that drama. You finally realize that he was gay or he was this or he was that or that job that, you know, you finally come out of it. But you need someone to help you when you come out of it and the joy subsides and you realize, oh, God, here I am. Then you need somebody to help keep you motivated and support you as you go to where you're going.
Because otherwise it's easy to give up, right?
It's easy to give up or it's easy to slip back.
Mm-hmm. Both of them.
And a lot of people think, oh, if I could just get out of it, I'm not going to ever go back. But I'm telling you, if what's in front of you, and we've heard this quoted before, if what's in front of you is not greater than what's behind you, you will go backward. You need something in front of you to focus on, to move toward. And I think the second time I left my husband, the difference this time was I set something in front of me. I started looking towards something else. I started allowing myself to be coached through books and through people. I started creating a new normal, started looking for something different. Sure, it felt uncomfortable in the beginning because it was unfamiliar. But I surrounded myself with supports, and one of those supports for me was you, Bonnie.
Well, I'm glad I could be there for you, Suzette, because certainly you've inspired me plenty.
Those online midnight emails. and you always answered, and you gave me truth. Because knowledge is power only if you receive it. And I'm so grateful that I had an open heart to be taught something different. And this is very key. You're sure you leave a bad situation, but you need to have something in front of you that's greater. And many times having a coach or doing something that will educate you where you're going will keep you moving forward and will make it more difficult to slip backwards. I realized I didn't know anything about men. I didn't know anything about men. After two marriages, I realized I did not know anything about men, be it straight or gay. So I said, okay, if I want to attract straight men and straight available men, then I need to understand how that looks, how men express that.
Uh-huh.
And so I think, you know, and that's the same thing with any goal that we have, whether it's moving toward a job, you know, whatever that is, moving toward being an entrepreneur, business owner, an author, whatever that is, whatever that is.
Suzette, can you tell us a little bit the difference between coaching and therapy?
Certainly. Therapy deals more with mental health. I'm not suggesting that you should be in an institution, but mental health, maybe you're going through some type of trauma, grief, loss, wounds from your childhood that are keeping you from being able to make healthy choices to an acceptable functional degree. Where you're not functioning, you hit that brick wall, and you cannot function. You are seared by that event. Then that's therapy. That's counseling.
Uh-huh.
Coaching deals with now and the future. Coaching gets you from point A to point B. And certainly, there are some influences from the past, but they are not disruptive to the point that you cannot move forward. You might acknowledge some things from the past, but they're not tripping you up to the point that you need therapy. And a good coach, if he or she sees that you're stuck and it's keeping you from being able to move forward, they will suggest that you get therapy concurrent with what you're getting from them.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely coaching helps you to move from where you are to where you want to be. And that person becomes more of a partner, a mentor, a guide, you know, a supporter.
And you can do coaching through, you know, over the telephone. You never have to be in person.
Indeed. My clients are through over the telephone, Skype, video chat. It doesn't even have to be face-to-face, and that's the beauty of it. You can be in your fuzzy slippers and be coached.
Can you do without makeup?
You don't have to fix your hair, put any clothes on. You can sit right there.
Okay, as long as you don't have to put makeup on or anything, right?
Exactly. You can be in your car driving. You know, you don't have to be at home. If you're at a coffee shop or you just finished meeting a friend, you can still be coached as long as you have a cell phone or access to some type of phone. It doesn't even have to be the internet. You can still be coached, and it's just as effective. Just as effective.
So when you're coaching someone, you kind of take where they want to go, where they are, come up with a game plan. And
yes.
Then look at the steps that it takes to get there. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, I help them because a lot of people kind of think in broad strokes. They are very general. And coaching helps you to make it as specific as you can. And helps you to make it measurable. Because it's very important to know that you're making progress and to celebrate the small successes along the way. And so having a coach to help you to kind of get more specific about exactly what it is that you want. And I use an example about I want to be wealthy. And that's such a broad stroke. But a coach can kind of help you to kind of peel that banana back and you say, you know what, I want freedom. And that person can say, what does freedom mean to you? When do you feel the most free? You know, it can kind of help you to fine-tune it and to make it something that's attainable within a certain amount of time. And also coaching is not something, well, therapy can go on for years and years and years. Coaching has a beginning and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times after the coaching process, you can enter into some type of maintenance of what you have. Or there might be another goal on the other side of the goal.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times it's really important to have that kind of relationship with someone because, you know, we're even after our marriages are over, which for a lot of our women this happens and they really need direction, you know, you're still tied down with all the other problems that come with it when you have children. And a lot of these guys just don't want to let go when they try to really make your life impossible. So you're dealing with a lot of negativity, and you really need to have somebody positive there to inspire you, wouldn't you say so?
I would say so. And I think it, a lot of times it's like when you come out of a situation, especially when you've been married to a gay man or you've dated a gay man or whatever, usually when you come out of it, you're going to do one of two things. Either you're going to be to the point that's like, I don't want a man to come within 10 feet of me. Or you're going to be so deprived emotionally, sexually, that you're going to rush into another relationship too soon. Having a coach can help you, especially if you're feeling that thing. I remember when I left my husband the second time. I was so deprived. I was like, I entered straightway into a sexual relationship. I think had I had a coach, I won't say that it wouldn't have kept me from doing it, but I could have still been dealing with my issues about how do I feel about intimacy, you know, my self-value. There could have been somebody that could have helped me to kind of get my thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
Because you come out with a kind of a skewed self-esteem.
And I think that's
true.
You
don't know your boundaries. You know, you don't know when a guy is really being nice to you. You know, you might still have some wounding there. And if anybody says anything that even remotely reminds you of your ex, you're going to explode. And having someone to say, well, wait a minute, this is normal and this is not. It gives you some balance,
mm-hmm.
a balanced viewpoint, would be very helpful.
And I think that really would have helped me on my way, as it would for every woman who's on this journey, who really just needs to have direction and needs some encouragement. And I think that more so with coaching than in therapy, you know, a coach can really be there right by your side. Where a therapist is looking for different issues. A coach is like your own personal cheerleader. That's how I like to explain it. You need somebody to be there, hold your hand, you know, be your cheering team, everything you accomplish, that they're there cheering for you, right?
Mm-hmm. It's just like, and it's amazing because we watch sports all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And see how the coaches, good coaches, not the ones that slap the people around, but good coaches, that most little boys who maybe have grown up without fathers will point to their coach or their big brother, a form of a coach, as the person that saved their lives. Because that person sees the treasure in you and holds you accountable for something greater and better, and will not allow you to continue to self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if anybody needs coaching, this is a woman you need to get in touch with. And Suzette, I see on YouTube you have a lot of video action going on.
Yes, I'm spreading my wings, Bonnie. I'm spreading my wings.
Yes, if you go to YouTube and you hit into Suzette Hinton, S-U-Z-E-T-T-E, Hinton, H-I-N-T-O-N, or, of course, you can see some of the promos on my Facebook site now for Suzette, now that I'm learning how to post things. I had a Facebook disability until a few weeks ago, two months ago, I decided I have to learn how to do this. So I was so proud of myself today. I was really proud of myself. I got 3 pictures of you up on my site today, you know, but so that people could see about the show and listen to you, which reminds me, I wanted to say hi to a wonderful new friend I have, Terry, who's not part of our network, but she's a wonderful friend, and, you know, she was so excited to be reading about you, so I know she's going to be listening to this show. Yes, and, you know, I think we're all a network of people who care about people and who want to see the best for people, and thanks to people like you, you know, women are able to move ahead. So how's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
The best way is they can go to my website, www.suzetterhinton.com. They go there, they'll find out about how to get in contact with me as well as more about my book and my coaching program.
And also you're on my website, you know, if anybody wants to go to my website at gayhusbands.com, on the right-hand side links, you'll see Suzette's on there also for coaching. And she does specialize with minority women, but she's very good with every woman or man.
Yes.
And it doesn't really matter. You know, if I had to pick a coach, you would be it, Suzette.
Am
I too old for coaching, do you think? Is there an age limit?
You know, this is the first time I've had that question asked to me.
When do people get too old to change? I think I'm at that point.
I mean, I don't think they're ever too old. As long as they're open. As long as they're open, you know what? I can coach.
Yeah. I guess there's no age limit after all. Yeah, but definitely as soon as I hang up the phone, I'm getting your book, and we'll have you back if it's okay in a few months, and we'll go over all the finer points of the book and to keep inspiring women to, you know, really do what they need to do to move ahead. And
I look forward to it. I look so forward to talking with you.
Thanks,
Suzette. Anytime.
You truly are a treasure, really. And I think you have so much to offer. And I will be talking to you sooner than later.
Oh, fantastic.
So I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in tonight so you could be inspired like I always am. And if you're interested in getting in touch with Suzette, it's easy enough to get her contact information. Just let me know. And if not, just go to her, you know, website at SuzetteRHinton.com. I'll go to Amazon like I'm going to do now and order her book. And we'll be having her back shortly in, you know, the summer, early summer, to talk about the book after I read it. How's that?
That sounds fantastic.
All right. Well, listen, Suzette, and all of our listeners, have a wonderful week. And we'll be talking to all of you soon. We'll be back next week with Kimberly Brooks. She's a therapist. I don't know if you've ever heard her, but she's extremely inspiring also. And for therapists. So she's always great to listen to. And Suzette, all I can say is I love you.
Oh, I love you too, Bonnie.
All right, and I'll talk to you again soon. And good night to all our listeners.
Good night, listeners.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.